providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report. I hope everybody enjoyed those first two segments as we are transitioning now over to more broad market commentary here, as well as looking back on the last couple weeks, some key, I guess, changes in trend that we have seen in some of the larger markets. We are chatting right now with Mark Chandler, managing partner over at Bannockburn Global Forex. Now, Mark, let's start off with the data on Friday. When we are recording this, the jobs numbers out of the U.S. came out, and payrolls in November grew by just short of 200,000. That was about 14,000 more than expected. However, the prior 2 months were revised lower by a total of 35,000. So broadly, we can call this a wash, I guess. And the market moves on the back of this have been fairly volatile in terms of U.S. markets, which are mostly flat on the day. The dollar is getting a bounce. And even more interestingly, I think interest rates are getting a bit of a bounce after a pretty tough sell-off. So before we get into some of these individual markets, Mark, what did you see within the jobs data here that you think needs to be noted?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. I mean, the jobs there, the headline number seems fairly good. I mean, 199,000, can't complain about that. But when you really strip away the government sector, you get the private payrolls, that was 150,000. And that included about 30,000, 35,000 returning striking workers. So we really are looking at a relatively subdued private sector jobs report. However, underneath, if you remember that the jobs report is really a composite of two different surveys. One's an establishment survey. That's how we get the non-farm payrolls, the payrolls of these businesses. But there's also a household survey. And the household survey showed a jump of almost 750,000 jobs. That is why the news, I think, that was going to lead the headlines is that the unemployment rate fell from 3.9% to 3.7%. Many people were concerned that if we got up to 4% and we're still there in January, that the SOM rule, which is just a regularity that unemployment has like an inflection point. If it rises a little bit, no big deal. But once it rises past a certain threshold, then it continues to go up. That 4% is the threshold for January. We come back down to 3.7%. So I'd say that the risk of this recession signal has diminished. And what makes it all the more important is that the participation rate went up. Typically, when the participation rate goes up, you'd expect some upward pressure on the unemployment rate. But that didn't happen this time. So I think that also the favorable development. And the other development that's favorable, I guess two other ones. One is the average work week. The average hours increased. And this is important because we know that output is GDP. All the goods and services we produce is a function of how many hours are being worked and productivity. So increase in hours worked means that given the tens of millions of people that are working, that increase of only 6 minutes a week is tantamount to a couple hundred thousand full-time positions. So output, this is bottom line here, is that there's no sign in today's U.S. jobs data that the economy is on the edge of recession. And I think that the markets responded accordingly, as you would expect, taking interest rates higher as they rethink the aggressiveness of Fed policy.
Well, Mark, let's dive into interest rates a little bit, because in general, they've been trending lower. If we look at the 10-year as we record this, it's at 4.24. It wasn't that long ago that we were just talking about a 5% 10-year yield. The 2-year has fallen down to 4.71. Now, today, on the back of this jobs report, you're right, they are trending higher. The interest rates and bonds are selling off. But in general, bonds have gotten a bid over the last few weeks. What do you make of the general change in tenor in bonds and in interest rates?
There's been a big drop in U.S., not only in U.S. rates, but global interest rates. Think about last week, the week ending December 1st, the U.S. 2-year yield fell 41 basis points, and the 10-year fell 27 basis points. These are just huge moves in a week that did not see CPI or a Fed meeting. This is just a very large move, and I think you're right. The market has come around to the view that interest rates at both sides of the curve have peaked. I think, though, that the price action after the jobs data means that we probably reached a floor in the 10-year yield around 4.10. And maybe go up a bit further here. Maybe it's like 4.50 again. We're about 4.24, 4.25 here. But I think there has been a watershed. And again, it's not just the U.S. I think that a combination of factors are doing it. I think the market realized that growth is slowing. And, of course, growth has been stagnant in Europe and in Japan this year, and Canada for that matter. And so the real change has been the market believing that the U.S. economy is also going to slow down dramatically from a little bit better than 5% annualized growth we saw in Q3. So I had thought that we'd have a backing up of U.S. interest rates, partly because I thought that the market had pricing in at one point 125 basis points of Fed cuts next year. This seemed a bit aggressive to me, not only in the terms of magnitude, but also the market's confidence of that. Not just a probability, but that really was the odds-on favorite. That's like it was almost 100% discounted. But instead, I think what's happened is other countries, their interest rates have fallen further. So when it comes to the macro situation, especially policy and the foreign exchange market, I look at the two-year interest rate differential. And even though U.S. interest rates fell sharply, other countries' rates fell even faster. So that meant that the U.S. premium over Eurozone, over the U.K., over Canada, over Australia increased. So the U.S. is still the high yield country among the majors. And I think that is why the dollar has caught this bid here. And especially now after the employment data, the U.S. employment data, I think the market is accepting that. And we've seen a jump in U.S. interest rates, barely retracing, though, last week's move. I've got the U.S. 10-year up about 4 basis points this week. The 2-year is up a bit more, 17 basis points. That takes away, say, roughly half of a cut that had been priced in.
Now, this move down in interest rates, yes, it picked up a bit of steam in the last couple of weeks, but rates were moving down all of November after the 10-year almost reached 5%. This has clearly helped out the U.S. equity markets, because look at how well the markets have done in November. But even a day like today on Friday, it's interesting to see U.S. markets more flatlining, more neutral as rates continue to move higher. Are you correlating any of your outlook for the U.S. markets with where rates are going, that it sounds like you think they could tick up a little bit?
I do think rates could go up a bit more. That tells me, to your point about the stock market, that we still may struggle a little bit. But I do think that in a broad picture, though, the U.S. economy is slowing down, but it's not slowing down quickly. And that's why I really think that this the week ahead is going to be very important as far as how much central banks push against the aggressiveness of rate cuts that are being priced in.
Well, Mark, what do you make of some of the market reaction to the wobbles in the rates that we see in other sectors? Because there are some sectors very triggered by moves in the interest rates, and we've seen some pretty big moves over the last week or two in a number of commodity markets and also currency markets.
Yeah, so to me, there's three big moves that are sort of like, I want to say like whipsaw, not whipsaw, but like a whiplash. How fast and big these moves have been. And I know many people are concerned that we've seen a jump in volatility of what's regarded as supposed to be one of the safest assets, U.S. Treasuries. So I do think that some of the volatility we've seen in gold and oil, for example, have really been a function of or part of this larger picture of higher volatility in the interest rate markets. I was amazed by not only gold's rally to record highs, but also the reversal. To me, it was like on Monday this week when we had like roughly $125 range in spot gold, closing lower on the day below the previous day's low, and now we've got some follow-through selling. I think that was kind of a climactic sell-off or a climactic rally in gold that marks a top. I mean, a record high, yes, not sustained for more than a few hours. So gold, I thought, was a big move, and I think it partly makes sense. If you think about gold, leaving aside its historic attribute of a safe haven and that, but if you tell me that gold is a non-interest-bearing asset and interest rates just fell sharply, I would say that it seems to me to make sense then that non-interest-bearing assets do better in a lower interest rate environment. So not just gold, but as we were talking about before, crypto also did well. In the currency markets, the low yielders are the Japanese yen, which is the only G10 currency that's going to close higher on the week against the U.S. dollar, and the Swiss franc, which has also done well, not so much against the US dollar, but really within its neighborhood. And by that I mean just on December 7th, the euro fell to new lows for the year against the Swiss franc. And so I see the decline in interest rates boosting risk appetites and favoring those assets that don't have a yield stream.
So, Mark, to your point about gold and how it did reach those all-time highs, it's also been noted number of times that it closed the month last month at all-time highs and then closed last week at all-time highs. Is this more bullish longer term then because of those monthly and weekly closes?
I don't know. I mean, I suppose there's some technicians that would say that, but I'm thinking that what we're experiencing today or this week could end up to be a big outside down week, a very bearish development. It looks to me like we're going to close. We're down almost $30 in the spot market here ahead of the weekend. We're going to close below the 20-day moving average for the first time in a couple of weeks. I suspect we're headed towards the 200-day moving average around 1950 or so. And of course, those lows from November are a little bit lower, near 1931, 1932, which also at the time was a 200-day moving average. So I do think there's more some more downside, which still makes sense in the bigger macro picture of these relationships where U.S. interest rates may have bottomed, especially ahead of the FOMC meeting next week. And so we could see higher global interest rates, and also then more unwinding of this gold rally.
Mark, you also brought up some of the currencies that are most sensitive to interest rates falling, like the yen and the Swiss franc. But how do you see the currency picture setting up if there is a reversal in rates? If we see follow through from what we saw today, where rates start rising again and bonds are selling off, would you expect some of those trends to reverse in the yen and the franc? And how do you, most importantly, see the dollar setting up as we move into the end of the year here?
Yeah, I had thought that there was a solid top to the dollar index, bottom to the euro. Early October, dollar index peaked around 107.35, and the sell-off. I mean, we got down at the end of November. So if there was a peak around 107.35, we bottomed in late November around 102.5. And so I think that we're going to be correcting. That is, we should be looking at retracement levels going higher. And I think that we'll see a higher dollar into the end of the year, maybe even into early next year. And it'll be helped by the backing up of U.S. interest rates. I mean, what happened, I think, on November 30th, Europe reported, that's the Eurozone reported, an extremely low CPI number. That gave credence to the idea that they, maybe more than the Fed, they're below 2.5% CPI. It gave more credibility to the idea that they would cut rates more aggressively. And we've seen some profit taking on long euro positions. And so that translates into a firmer dollar index. And we're going to close, it looks to me, like around 104 here today, ahead of the weekend. And I think that we could get back up to the 105, 106 area in the next couple of weeks. And again, it's predicated on the idea that while Europe and if the Eurozone, the UK, are lucky to avoid a contraction in Q4. The US economy is slowing down dramatically from that 5% handle on Q3 GDP. But today's employment data, and I would expect the next batch of data to continue to show that a contraction, that the US economy is slowing, but not in a contraction. And so I'd look for this dollar index, a dollar more broadly, to rally into over the next couple of weeks, retracing much of what it lost in November.
So, Mark, one other sector that you even touched on there, oil price. And you were saying that the driver also being rates moving lower. But can we also compare that to the economic outlook with some of the weaker economic data that we've been seeing? Because oil peaked right around $90 a barrel at about the beginning of October, moved down through October, flatlined a little bit in November, and then took another leg lower. How do you balance out rates driving oil, but also the economic outlook being a little bit weaker heading into next year?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think oil is really more about supply and demand. And most recently, I think it's really been about demand. People are concerned about the weakness of demand. And that's why it's not surprising to me that around the U.S. jobs data, the strength of the U.S. jobs data, we're seeing oil bounce back here. Remember, oil, so I'm looking at the WTI, and we have fallen. This is going to be the seventh week in a row of declines, which is really matches the longest losing streak in oil. since I think it's like 2018 or so. So it's, I'd say it's primarily demand, but there's also some concern about supply. You know, what a lot of people miss, because they focus so much on the U.S. strategic reserves, the U.S. is producing about 13, maybe a little bit more than 13 million barrels a day. The U.S. has become really the world's largest oil producer, and it's exporting about just shy of half of that. And so I'd say that, and not only is the U.S. supply there, but it seems like the market didn't give much credibility to the OPEC's idea of, yeah, the Saudis would extend their million barrel cut, and the other countries would voluntarily cut somehow another million barrels on a voluntary basis. And the market's just suspicious of that. We also, reports suggest that Russia is producing a bit more than it admits to, and several other countries within the OPEC family are as well. Kind of interesting. One interesting development that caught my eye was that Brazil is going to join OPEC next year, but says it will not participate in any rate, in any output cuts. Just kind of interesting. OPEC grows, but maybe a little bit less teeth to it. But this is a big drop in oil prices that we've seen over this run. It began really late October. Oil was near $87 a barrel. So just shy from that $90 a barrel you were pointing out. But almost $87 a barrel. And over this run, we've dropped to today we're at 69.5. I'm looking at the January WTI contract. So I do think that this move is a bit excessive in oil, and I would expect to see oil beginning recovering a bit more, maybe back up towards $75, $76 a barrel next week.
Yeah, Mark, it's been so interesting to watch these OPEC countries, and if Brazil comes on board with OPEC, a lot of them don't want to cut their production. They want to keep producing, and so that's helped drive the price down. Is that that's one thing to say you're going to do production cuts, and it's another thing to see those countries actually do them. So that's going to be interesting to keep our eyes on, but that does bring into the equation, do these lower energy prices help with the inflation picture? We are going to get an inflation reading in the week to come, but what other data are you watching in the week to come? You've mentioned to us off mic that next week may be one of the last important weeks for a lot of key data. Walk us through what you're going to have on your radar.
Sure. So I do think that the drop in oil prices helps inflation expectations. And we saw that with the University of Michigan's survey. The one-year inflation November number showed an increase. And today, ahead of the weekend, we saw a sharp drop in inflation expectations. The 1 year fell from 4.5% to 3.1%. The 5 to 10 year fell from 3.2% to 2.8%. And in the U.S., we've been seeing a sharp drop, roughly a 20 to 25% in retail gasoline prices. All that should help the inflation picture. And you're right, that's going to be, in terms of economic data, that is one of the big pieces next week. We're going to get U.S. CPI. And it looks like another flat number in November after a flat October reading. So that'll help ease inflation. But I think that the real focus next week is going to be on central bank meetings more than the inflation reading. I think people feel comfortable with the CPI easing a bit more. And the full focus then is on how does the policymakers respond? And so we have the Federal Reserve meeting on Wednesday. And there, the important thing to keep in mind is not that the Fed's going to do anything, but that they will update their forecasts. And the September dot plot, they had forecast, the median dot was for one rate cut from current levels. They thought that they would hike rates another time this year. And so they, if you really look at the numbers, it's really looking at two cuts next year, but only one, given that they've only raised rates once. So they've got one cut priced in. The market says there are going to be four cuts next year at least. And so I'd be looking at what the Fed says more than what the Fed does. And there, the keep in mind that the summary of economic projections, their dot plot, is a communication tool and part of the forward guidance they give to the market. The following day, the ECB, the Bank of England, and the Swiss National Bank meet. None of them are likely to do anything. And the ECB is going to update its forecasts as well. And again, here the issue is how much do officials push back? You know, when the Fed met previously in November, November 1st, the big argument was, well, the market's done some of the tightening for the Fed. And we're talking about the tightening of financial conditions. And Powell mentioned, he said the word persistence several times, meaning that it's not just short-term moves about tightening of financial conditions, but the moves have to be sustained. We haven't seen them sustained. But meanwhile, the market's pricing in that the first cut from the ECB, it's more than 50% priced in for March. And this seems perhaps a little bit aggressive. I'd be leaning more towards a Q2 cut for the ECB. But again, the economy is weak, near stagnation or worse. Inflation has fallen to just above 2%. So there's a justification for it. But I think that a lot of central banks sort of saw their inflation credentials tarnished a bit, whether in a post-COVID environment, whether it's their expanding their balance sheets or how long it took them to raise rates. Whatever it is, I think that the central banks would probably want to stay tighter for a little bit longer than the market's pricing in. We also get the Bank of England meeting, and the Bank of England's been maybe more successful than the ECB or the Fed in pushing back against the ideas of a near-term rate cut. The market doesn't have the first rate cut fully priced into for the UK until early Q3, while the market is about, say, 70% chance or so of a cut coming, around the end of Q1, both the Fed and the ECB. Swiss National Bank saw low inflation numbers as well. They're unlikely to cut rates, though again, the strength of the Swiss franc gives them that latitude. I think they too will prefer to be on hold, push back slightly against rate cut expectations, suggesting maybe it's not really delivered also until the middle of next year. The one that's the central bank that's more questionable from the market's point of view is Norway. Currency has been weak. The signal has been that they're not going to raise rates again, but the swaps market is still pricing in a chance that they raise rates again before they cut them. Those are the few major central banks. That's going to be Wednesday, Thursday. But also know that Mexico and Brazil, as far as the emerging markets go, those are the ones that people will be following. Brazil likely to continue to cut rates. That's part of the story of the cycle. Some of those emerging market countries raised rates before the Federal Reserve, more aggressively than the Federal Reserve. And now, especially in Latin America, a couple of countries in Central Europe beginning to cut rates ahead of the ECB and ahead of the Federal Reserve. Brazil is one of those countries. Mexico, though, is not. Mexico's overnight rate's about 11.25%. And they're slowly moving towards signaling a rate cut. They have elections at the beginning of June next year. The market's looking at two rate cuts by then, but nothing in the week ahead.
All right, so a lot for us to watch out for next week. And then, yeah, I think we're all expecting it to get a little bit more quiet as the holiday season comes around. But, boy, oh boy, the end of this year, especially November's moves, and now even into December, I'm sure some investors are a lot more optimistic heading into next year. But it has also been driven by slightly lower economic data. And as you said, a big change in investor expectations in terms of rate cuts, and a lot of them potentially coming next year. Mark, thank you as always for your time. It's great chatting with you. If anybody listening wants to follow along with Mark on a daily basis, go check out his website, mark2market.com. I'll post a link to that website within our weekend show posting. And Mark, thank you very much for joining us on this weekend show. Everybody, thanks for tuning in, taking some time away from your weekend to listen to our guests. And please be sure to go back through our website and podcast to listen to all the daily editorials and company updates. Mark, everybody listening, I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Thank you. Good luck, everybody.